This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We can call this a success story, even though an extra 47,000 people have died as a consequence of the disruptions.
That's Pedro Alonso, director of the World Health Organization's Global Malaria Program, saying the death toll from the mosquito-borne disease was up last year due to COVID-19, but not as high as feared. Details coming up. And Gambia's Election Commission has declared President Adama Barrow the winner of last Saturday's election. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Hospitals in Gauteng province, which contains two of South Africa's biggest cities, are packed with people infected with the Omicron variant of COVID-19. Doctors say most patients have not been vaccinated and an alarming number are children under the age of five. Darren Taylor reports.
Data from South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the NICD, shows almost 2,500 COVID-19 cases reported per day 2 weeks ago when local scientists announced they'd identified a new variant. On Friday, this had spiked to around 16,500 per day. The steep rise indicates Omicron's highly transmissible nature. The NICD says the increase in cases in such a short period of time is unprecedented in the trajectory of the pandemic.
And unfortunately, we're seeing a more than doubling of hospital admissions each day.
Professor Ian Sun is an infectious diseases specialist who serves on South Africa's COVID-19 Presidential Advisory Committee. He's advising hospitals to prepare for significant surges of patients in the coming weeks and months and to make sure they have plenty of oxygen. Dr. Farid Abdullah of the South African Medical Research Council says the surges are already happening in Johannesburg and Tshwane.
There's been a rather rapid rise in hospital admissions with patients who have COVID, whether they are presenting with COVID pneumonia or severe COVID disease or other conditions and are incidentally testing positive for COVID. All of the hospitals in Tshwane are seeing an upsurge, and the COVID bed occupancy is increasing 30-40% per day over the last few days.
Only 36% of people in South Africa are fully vaccinated. Sun says those who haven't received the jab are particularly susceptible to Omicron, as are individuals who haven't been exposed to COVID-19 before.
At this time, we think about 75-80% of hospitalizations are unvaccinated. It could be as large as 40% of the population that has not yet either been vaccinated or had a previous infection with coronavirus up until now. Multiply the transmission rate that is occurring times the number of people that still can become infected and a portion of those becoming hospitalized. And so we have a large pool of people who can still present with overwhelming infection and severe disease.
Health authorities say Omicron's reinfecting some people who've been vaccinated, but mostly their symptoms are mild. One of the country's top epidemiologists, Professor Salim Abdul Karim, told VOA current vaccines should provide good protection against Omicron. However, the World Health Organization says only 3% of people in Africa are fully vaccinated. Another disease expert, Professor Shabir Mahdi, says the longer viruses flourish in populations, the more likely they are to mutate into variants.
Without any question, if we were to vaccinate more people, we would be able to dampen the amount of virus that would be circulating. We're not going to eliminate this virus under any stretch of the imagination, but we can reduce the amount of virus that's circulating. And most importantly, is that vaccines are going to be much more foolproof when it comes to protecting against severe disease than taking your chances of being vaccinated.
Sun agrees that COVID-19 is going to be around for a long time, and those who believe the disease will eventually just fizzle out are wrong.
The problem is that RNA viruses don't follow those patterns, and indeed they actually become more efficient in their transmission without necessarily reducing the disease risk. It is over time that our immune system needs to catch up. We therefore don't have the ability to predict that this virus as a virus becomes weaker, whereas we do in fact see that the immune system will improve with time to in fact deal with the infection.
The South African government's expected to soon make vaccination mandatory in some settings in an effort to reduce the impact of a fourth wave of the pandemic. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The World Health Organization reports a significant rise in malaria cases and deaths in 2020 due to COVID-19 disruptions in malaria services. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva on WHO's latest World Malaria Report.
Over the past two decades, global malaria death rates have been cut in half, saving the lives of 10.6 million people. New data gathered by the WHO show COVID-19 has stopped and even reversed the progress made in reducing deaths from this preventable, treatable disease. The WHO's World Malaria Report estimates 241 million malaria cases and 627,000 malaria deaths globally have occurred in 2020. This represents an increase of 14 million cases and 69,000 deaths compared to the previous year. WHO links the increase to disruptions of malaria prevention, diagnosis, and treatment services during the pandemic. Director of WHO's Global Malaria Program, Pedro Alonso, says the situation could have been far worse. The good news, he says, is that the predicted doomsday scenario did not transpire. He notes gloomy projections made in March 2020 of a huge spike in malaria have not materialized.
One worst-case scenario implied a doubling of malaria deaths. So, let me reiterate this. That is not the case. We can call this a success story, even though an extra 47,000 people have died as a consequence of the disruptions.
The report finds progress in the global fight against malaria remains uneven. Between 2000 and 2020, WHO has certified 12 countries as being malaria-free. Two countries, China and El Salvador, have achieved this status in 2021 despite the ongoing pandemic. Since 2015, both cases and deaths have stalled in most of the world's 93 endemic countries and territories. However, other figures show malaria cases have increased in 32 countries, most in sub-Saharan Africa and some in South America. Alonso says the situation remains especially precarious in Africa, where the malaria burden remains unacceptably high. He notes Africa accounts for about 96% of global deaths, 80% among children under age 5.
And at the same time, the pandemic is not over and the pace of economic recovery is uncertain. Without immediate and accelerated action, key 2030 targets of the WHO Global Technical Strategy will be missed and additional ground may be lost.
WHO strategy calls for a 90% reduction in malaria cases and deaths by 2030. It also presses for the elimination of malaria in at least 35 countries and for the prevention of disease resurgence in all countries that are malaria-free. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Gambia's Independent Election Commission has declared President Adama Barrow the winner of the December 4th election by a wide margin. The commission says Barrow captured 53% of the vote. His nearest competitor, political veteran Osenu Dabo, head of the United Democratic Party, took 28%. This was the first election since the ouster of longtime President Yahya Jammeh, who refused to acknowledge Barrow's victory in 2016. Jammeh ultimately was forced from office in 2017 and lives in exile. Reporter Modu S. Juf tells VOA's Kate Pond-Dawson about the reaction in the capital, Banjul.
There were scenes of jubilation by thousands of supporters of President Adama Barrow when the Independent Electoral Commission declared President Barrow the winner of the December 4 presidential elections. Late into the night, thousands of people gathered at Westfield in Serekunda and also at the Makati Square in Banjul, where Adama Barrow delivered a short victory speech.
Juke, however, says some of the opposition candidates are challenging the results.
Three of the opposition candidates have disputed the results even before the final declaration was made last evening. The main challenger of President Adama Barrow, Usainu Dabo, and also Mama Kande, who came out third in the previous elections, and also the independent candidate Esar Faal, jointly issued a statement rejecting the results of the elections last evening. They raised concerns about the delay in the tallying of the votes and the announcements of the results. They also claimed that there were issues of irregularities with the whole election process, but they have not specified what irregularities these were.
Late Sunday, after the IEC announced the results, Barrow addressed a jubilant crowd in Banjul. He thanked voters and the opposition candidates and called for unity.
I call on all Gambians, irrespective of our political divide, to put aside our political and other differences and come together as one people to work towards the development of our country. I thank you. Oh, my God, bless you.
Opposition leader Darbo told journalists that the four opposition candidates would pursue their concerns over the vote tally.
We are investigating this matter with our partners to determine our future course of action. At this point in time, we reject the results announced thus far by the IEC. We reserve the right to embark on any course of action the situation requires. To this end, all actions are on table. In the meantime, we urge all Gambians to remain calm and peaceful while we continue our investigations of these concerns.
Barrow's decision to run for re-election has drawn criticism. After initially agreeing to step down after 3 years, Barrow decided to serve a full 5-year term and run again, leaving some opposition partners angry. Yahya Jammeh's 2-decade rule was marked by arbitrary arrests, enforced disappearances and summary executions that were revealed through dramatic testimony during Truth, Reconciliation and Reparation Commission hearings that lasted for several years. The commission recently handed its 17-volume report to Barrow, urging him to ensure that perpetrators of human rights violations were prosecuted. Barrow has vowed to fight for justice for the victims of the Jammeh government. Extremist gunmen killed at least 12 soldiers and wounded 8 at a military camp in southeastern Niger late yesterday. The Associated Press reports close to 100 extremist rebels on motorcycles carried out the attack close to the border with Burkina Faso. A government statement without specifying the exact number said dozens of the attackers were killed when the soldiers fought back. The statement also said that the military is pursuing the rebels through land and air operations with reinforcements from the capital Niamey and other military bases. Southeastern Niger is a region regularly targeted by jihadists affiliated with Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State group. In the west of the country, Niger also has to contend with Boko Haram and Islamic State West Africa province along the border with Nigeria. Niger is the world's poorest country, according to the UN's Human Development Index. The World Health Organization has recognized Botswana for its efforts to prevent the transmission of HIV from expectant mothers to unborn children. Officials say no children born to HIV-positive mothers this year had the virus. Mokandisi Dube reports from Habrone.
The World Health Organization awarded Botswana the silver tier status this week in recognition of efforts to prevent mother-to-child HIV transmission. The silver tier certification is given to countries that have lowered the mother-to-child HIV transmission rate to under 5% and provided prenatal care and antiretroviral treatment to more than 90% of pregnant women. Botswana has achieved the WHO's target of an HIV case rate of fewer than 500 per 100,000 live births. WHO Regional Director for Africa Matshidiso Moeti, in awarding the certificate in Gaborone on Thursday, said Botswana has demonstrated that an AIDS-free generation is possible.
I want to applaud this huge accomplishment by Botswana, which we know has had one of the world's most severe HIV epidemics. This achievement demonstrates that an AIDS-free generation is possible. It also marks an important step towards ending AIDS across the entire continent. Perhaps most importantly, it illustrates the remarkable progress that can be achieved when the needs of mothers living with HIV and their children are prioritized.
Botswana is the world's fourth highest HIV prevalence, but has made strides in fighting the virus. President Mokgweetsi Masisi says the award recognizes the country's progress towards an HIV-free generation.
This award is given to Botswana and Botswana as testimony to the success of our efforts as a country in the path to eliminate mother-to-child transmission of HIV. We are excited by this development because we've been battling with HIV/AIDS pandemic for very many years. The award, therefore, which is the first to be awarded to an African country, demonstrates that our efforts have not been in vain.
Masisi says HIV rate significantly decreased from 37.4% in 2003 to 18.4% in 2019. HIV-positive young women like Dlodlo Muilwa say the country is on a reassuring path.
One of the reasons that drive this huge change is that at the moment a woman tests positive for pregnancy, they also get tested for HIV. And if the results come out positive, then at that very moment they get enrolled for prevention of mother to child transmission. It means they cannot infect their unborn baby, or they cannot infect the baby during birth.
With the country making strides in preventing mother to child HIV transmissions, Muilwa says the future is much brighter for her and other HIV positive women.
I see a huge change for our future, since if you get to closely look at the youth that are living with HIV at this moment, a lot of them got infected through birth. And if right now babies are born HIV negative, then it means there are not going to be any HIV positive young people in the future if we are to take care of ourselves.
According to WHO, 15 countries globally have been certified for eliminating mother-to-child HIV transmission, but none had an epidemic as large as Botswana. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
Cameroon has deployed its military forces to help rangers crack down on poachers on its eastern border with the Central African Republic. Cameroon wildlife officials say poaching is again increasing after pandemic restrictions saw a drop in the number of animals being killed. Officials say in the last week alone, poachers have killed at least 8 elephants along the border. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's Forestry and Wildlife Ministry says several dozen armed poachers are attacking elephants along the CAR border. Francis Duran Na is the highest government forestry and wildlife official in the Cameroon East region that is home to several thousand elephants. He says rangers are tracking poachers in the area.
Des missions de monitoring ont pu identifier trois carcasses.
Now says Sunday, rangers assisted by the Cameroon military arrested three suspected poachers shortly after three fresh elephant carcasses were found in Lobeke National Park. He says the suspects have accepted responsibility for the killing of 8 elephants in the park within the past week. He says the poachers removed the tusk and abandoned the rest of the elephant's carcass. Na said the suspects told officials that ivory harvested from the elephants is taken to neighboring Nigeria, from where it is smuggled to Asian countries. He said more than 20 elephants have been killed in eastern Cameroon this year, but that the number could be more because rangers find it difficult to visit areas regularly attacked by armed groups from neighboring CAR. He said at his request, the government of Cameroon deployed troops to protect wildlife in Lobeke National Park, but gave no further details. Cameroon's Lobeke National Park covers an area of 217,854 hectares. The World Wide Fund for Nature reports that the elephant population in the park dropped from 4,200 in 2015 to 3,500 in 2018. WWF attributes the decrease to poaching for the ivory trade. In 2020, Cameroon wildlife officials, environmental non-governmental organizations, and conservation groups reported that the population of elephants had remained stable in the Central African state. Among the organizations working in Cameroon to protect endangered species is the Last Great Ape Organization. Laga Anna Egbe is the head of the Laga Media Department. Egbe says travel restrictions to stop the spread of the coronavirus after the first cases of COVID-19 were reported in Cameroon in March 2020 reduced poaching.
With COVID-19 travel restrictions lifted in Cameroon and many other countries, traffickers have found a way back to the illegal trade. Do not forget that the demand for ivory has remained very high, especially in Asian countries. Networks of traffickers in Asian countries work in collaboration with poachers in nations like Cameroon, where there are elephants. We think that all nations should enforce laws on ivory trade and punish all traffickers to deter or discourage the illegal trade.
The Central African Wildlife Trade Monitoring Network, TRAFIC, says the black market price of African ivory is about $2,000 per kilogram, and at that, traffickers from Central African countries are ready to take the risk. The WWF estimates that Cameroon is home to about 6,500 elephants, one of the largest populations left in Africa. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Thousands of Sudanese have taken to the streets in the capital of Khartoum and other cities. They are the latest protests against the October military coup and subsequent deal that reinstated Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. The French news agency AFP is reporting that Sudanese police fired tear gas today as thousands of protesters rallied against the military-dominated government near the presidential palace in Khartoum. Sudan's top general, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, seized power and detained Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok on October 25th, but after international condemnation and mass protests, reinstated him in a deal signed on November 21st. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at @CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA. every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.